It's the 19th hole with Michael Williams.
Greetings and salutations, everyone. Welcome to another edition of the 19th hole. I'm Michael Williams, your host, bringing you for yet another year the best of the best of the best in golf lifestyle. It is the middle of January. It's the beginning of the year. We're sort of beginning the golf season. We don't have the traditional events that we usually have, but we know that we want to play. We're ready to watch, and it's going to be a great season. For some of us, it already has been a great season. For those of us who have been given the opportunity to travel and to visit other courses, it's been great. I happen to have been among those favored few, and hopefully you will get to be among them too. One of my jobs is to give you some suggestions on places to go. To that end, this week we were sort of featuring a course that is among my very favorite in the world, bar none, which is TPC Dante Bay on the Sea of Cortez in Mexico. It is an absolutely spectacular course. It has no weaknesses, quite frankly. I think it could do anything it wants. It could host a beginner who would love the course, and it can host a PGA Tour event, and they would love the course. It is as flexible as all that, and is beautiful as all that. Joining me to talk about the course are the two men who made it happen. Owen Perry, who is the owner of Villa del Palmar, resort at which TPC Dante Bay is located, will be with me to talk about the building of the course, what his goals were, what his vision was for the course, and how it's been realized in that spectacular place down there at Dunzante Bay. Also joining me is one of my favorite people. You know him from the shows that we do right around the U.S. Open. He is so knowledgeable. He is so professional, and he's just one of a kind. Our good friend Reese Jones is going to be joining us to talk about that course, which he designed, and how he built it, what he was faced with in doing that course, and how he feels, what he feels are the best holes to see at that particular place, along with his other views on things having to do with golf, including the recent switchovers from LIV Golf, to talk about that. To talk about the growth of the game, talk about a lot of different things. I'm sure you're going to enjoy it. Both of them are spectacular guests. For those of us who are missing the tour event, like me, missing the tour event opening in Kapalua, I just say that I hope it comes back there. I really love seeing that thing in Hawaii. I love seeing those last couple of holes where they bomb it down 17 and 18. I love to see the whole thing. So I hope that they come back to that course. It's going to be a later start to the tour this year. But hopefully we'll have some great golf. We'll have, I hope, a developing rivalry between Rory and Scotty. We'll see those two go at each other and hopefully both achieve great things. I would like nothing more than to see those two guys in every one of the final foursomes or the final few foursomes on Sunday in the majors. It's going to be a great year, and I look forward to having those guys do their thing. The courses that are going to be featured for the majors are going to be great. It's going to be great overall. It's just going to be a marvelous year in 2026. You can see I'm excited. You can hear I'm excited anyway, because it is radio. But I'm excited. I confirm that. So without further ado, we're going to be back with our guests from Dunzante Bay, Owen Perry, the owner, and Reese Jones, the architect slash visionary who made it happen. You're going to love it. Stay with us. Go get yourself a cold beverage and a crunchy snack. We'll be right here waiting for you when you get back. Michael Williams, 19th hole.
Hi, Michael. This is Barbara Nicholas. You've got a great voice. We love hearing what you have to say, and we wish you the best for many years.
Welcome back to the 19th hole. Michael Williams, your host and Sherpa. It is new golf year 2026. As I look on the opportunities to play and to visit courses and destinations throughout the world, one of my very, very favorite places is in Mexico. It's a property called the Villa del Palmar Resort at Danzante Bay. It is a absolutely beautiful place in Laredo, Mexico, just sort of halfway up the Monterey Peninsula. And I had never been there before. The first time that I went, it was just beautiful. It was stunning. It was a revelation to me, actually. And as you know, I get a chance to go a lot of different places because of golf, see a lot of different places. This place was special, and it remains special. Not only for the hotel there, but especially because of the golf resort, the golf destination that they have made there. Joining me to talk about this amazing place is sort of a joke about it. The name that we want to call him is the founder, developer, visionary. In truth, he's all of those things for Villa del Palmar. Please welcome Owen Perry to the show. Owen, welcome back to the 19th hole. How are you, my friend?
I'm very good, Michael. I want to thank you very much for this opportunity. I just want to clarify, you know, where the location of Laredo is. It's in Baja Sur.
Oh, okay.
Baja Sur is on the Baja Peninsula, and it's located in the second largest sea park in the world now. And Jacques Cousteau convinced the Mexican government to make it the five islands of Laredo a sea park. So it has extra environmental protection. And so it's on the Sea of Cortez. I just wanted to let everyone know, you know, they can visualize where it is now.
Well, thank you for clarifying that. And again, what I remember about it, one of the great things is that body of water that's there and the amazing opportunities that you have there for viewing marine life, which I believe Jacques Cousteau said was at the equal to the Galapagos Islands. It has everything except sharks. It's just an amazing
place. The aquarium of the world. Yeah, he mentioned the aquarium of the world.
It's really spectacular, the place there. That's a great place to get started there. And I know that you have a history as developer of properties, of resorts, of places where people have a wonderful time. What brought you to this particular location? What made you say, hey, this is where what I want to do belongs?
Well, basically, you know, I left home on the East Coast at 19. I wanted some adventure in life. I ended up in Waikiki in Hawaii. And I got into promotional companies, vacation ownership, real estate, stuff like that for a few years. And then Mexico was starting to open up in tourism, and this was in the late 80s, early 90s. And a couple of my friends went to Mexico, to Puerto Vallarta, and they came back to me in Hawaii and says, oh, they need a guy like you. You know, you're in more of the marketing, and, you know, you do really well down there. And, you know, what we say in the islands, you get island fever after many years of being there. You want to get off the island. So they were willing to give me a 2-week paid vacation. So I went to Puerto Vallarta. And it was just an amazing place with the tropical mountains and the ocean. So I ended up staying. And I got into a partnership with two people, a Canadian and a Mexican gentleman. And we started a company called the Villa Group. Hmm. And so we have about 12 properties, and I moved to Cabo in 1995, right when Sammy Hagar started Cabo Wabo. It was a very eclectic little town at that time. Mm. And I built three resorts there. I was the partner in charge of Cabo. And on weekends, weekends a month, I'd take off and explore Baja. And one time I ended up in Laredo. They had the whalers in there, and I just thought, my gosh, with these mountain ranges here and the ocean and the islands, this is a beautiful spot. And then I went back about a year later because it has the best fishing. And I went back up there fishing, and I just toured around a little bit, and I just saw this bay, and I said, oh, my gosh, this place is – if somebody built a resort here, people would love to come here. Huh. And that's how I started.
So you just had the vision, you saw the place, and in your eye, you could see the place and how special it was. And in your mind's eye, you were able to envision this high-level resort that you have built to this day. How old is that resort right now?
It's about 11 years old now.
11 years old. Wow.
Yeah.
So it was really, really new the first time that I went there. And for not only for this resort, but for all of your resorts, do you have sort of a mission and vision in mind? What's the defining principle behind what you want your guests to experience when they visit one of your places?
What we do, and I've learned along the way, is that you provide service to your clients. You know, I've worked in Mexico a long time, and, you know, I tell our employees at the resorts that, hey, you're as important to us as the guests staying here, because without your service, you know, people would not enjoy their experience and they wouldn't come back. And so I would tell everybody, hey, you know, because sometimes Mexicans get a little intimidated with Americans and stuff like that. And I said, listen, you're as important to them, to us, as they are. Just look them in the eye, say buenos dias. And with that kind of mentality, we were able to really provide great service to whoever comes to the properties.
So really, it's just the idea of service to the individual. Yes. I know that I felt that when I was there. That makes sense to me. There's a real sense of service all the way through the properties, through any of the amenities. But I want to skip over to the golf amenity, because Danzante Bay, the golf course, is, and I've said this many times and I'll say it on the air here now, I have a chance to play just about any golf course out there in the world. And this golf course is one of my five favorites. Anywhere, anytime, I would take it over any place that you care to mention. Let me ask you this. Are you a golfer? Do you play?
I always was a worker, I would guess you would say. And I started playing golf, you know, in Puerto Vallarta, out in Punta Mita and areas like that. You know, I think I got my handicap down 1 year to 11. And that's the best I ever did.
That's not bad at all. Not bad at all.
Well, I was younger then. Now, anyway, in Cabo is really when I started playing a lot.
Hmm.
You know, when I went to Cabo, there I think we started like the fourth resort there.
Yeah.
And a developer came into Cabo, and I did a Jack Nicklaus golf course at the Palmia.
Yes.
And then he did another course at Cabo del Sol. Now in Cabo today, there's going to be 30 golf courses by the end of this year.
Amazing. Amazing.
Yes.
How the game.
Even Ernie Els is building a golf course now. He's the last, I think, architect that hasn't built a course there yet.
Wow. I mean, the game, and as the game is really growing now, too, in popularity for those who are dedicated golfers, even for those now who are just dedicated to having fun, they want to include golf as a thing to do. And you've set something up brilliantly at Danzante Bay as maybe the thing to do, in my humble opinion, at that resort. When you were looking, when you knew you wanted to build a golf course there and have golf be a part of that particular destination, how did you go about choosing an architect for that property? Who was it? A long, short list? How did you do it?
You know, basically, it was around 2005. We were going to do the master plan and do a golf course. So I started kind of thinking about it. And I talked to myself for a minute about what I enjoy about golf and what I don't enjoy about golf.
Hmm.
And what was not enjoyable at the time is these golf courses were getting so difficult to play.
Yes.
That if you were an average golfer, you came back at the end of the day and you didn't want to play another game of golf again.
Yeah.
You know?
Mm-hmm.
And in my mind, I thought that was one of the problems why there was a little bit of a decline in golf. Because, you know, every developer wanted to build a golf course that the pros could play on, you know? And that very seldomly happened.
Yeah.
But for the average golfer, you went out there and you just had a terrible time. So that was one of the beginning factors of my thoughts. And I happened to be invited to the Pro-Am here at Torrey Pines. I think it was the U.S. Open was like 06, 07 or something like that.
Yeah.
And yeah, I got invited, and they said Reese Jones was the, U.S. Open doctor. And, I was in Cabo at the time, and we met with Jack Nicklaus's team. And they were very complicated to deal with. And Greg Norman, we met with a little bit too. And they had kind of that old style of, making a golf course where, the PGA Tour might play one day.
Right.
And we didn't want that. We wanted an average golf course that, because it was more of a resort style golf course that the average player could go. And at the end of the day, it said, oh my gosh, you had a great time.
And that's a perfect description of how it turned out. And Reese Jones is the architect of that golf course,
yes.
Himself a genius, with many, many golf courses to his name. But given all that and all that he did there, did you have any direct influence on any holes, or did you sort of set out a plan or a path? Did you have any involvement in the design of the course?
I was heavily involved. I've built something like 12 resorts, and you get into the design of it. And I think you want to, kind of look for what your client's going to be and what you think is the right, golf is a business. It's you have to treat it as a business.
Yeah.
And, we wanted it to be a golf course that was not overly expensive to develop. And it would end up being a golf course that, the average golfer would go and have a fun time with. And that was our first goal coming in. When I met Reese, we actually went to Cabo together, and he was at another golf course, and, he agreed with me. We agreed right off the bat that, hey, golf is getting too hard. Let's do a golf course that, the average golfer would enjoy. And right then, me and Reese shook hands. We came to a deal. And it's one of the more pleasurable experiences I've ever had in my life is working with him. Because, he wasn't walking into every meeting with his huge ego and stuff like that. We would just sit down and talk and really try and come up with a plan that was really... Because I knew my property, I knew my property really well. And, so once we adapted the course to the property, after that, it was just easy to get along and do it.
And do it you did. When was the opening day for the golf course?
She was what? You were there.
I was.
Was that 6 years ago?
Yes, 6 years ago. Yes.
Yeah, 6 years ago. Yes. Yes.
It was, I remember it was a very windy day on that particular day, but it had to feel just like the completion, like the fulfillment of something really special. I know as I was going around it that you knew that you had something special. And that was the first time we played. All 18 were open. I believe 13 holes were open
right. First. Right.
But even then, you could see from what had already been done and what had been planned, that something really special was in the making. That had to be a special feeling for you too, almost like being a father or something.
Well, building, we had a special event for that weekend. We invited you, some other golf writers and sports writers. I had Don Feld over the Eagles to do a concert. We had Byron Scott of the Lakers as the MC. And we even had the governor of Baja coming to inaugurate everything.
Yeah.
And we had the biggest windstorm in the history of Baja that day.
Yeah.
So we had to move everything around. And that's why my book is called Plan E. For some reason, Plan E works for me. And it was a great day. No, we had a great experience. Everybody had a good time. The resort, because we're in the middle of nowhere, I don't think people understand how far, you know, we're away from any city or anything like that. Mm-hmm. And when we started, we had the business plan of a cruise ship. Because when you go on a cruise ship, you know, if you don't like the restaurant, or you don't like the services, you don't like the spa, you can't get off. Hmm. And the same thing with Dansante Bay and our property there, Villa del Palmar, is you're in the middle of nowhere. You know, the closest restaurant out of the resort is a half a mile, 30 minutes away. And I think that added to the experience, too. So we put a lot of effort into the food and beverage. I actually have 2 Michelin 3-star chefs working there now.
Yeah.
And I think that added a lot to, the experience people have there.
Yeah, I kind of wondered if the word no existed in the Spanish language. I studied some Spanish in school, but I never heard no once the whole time I was there. The staff and the whole atmosphere lends itself to people saying yes and doing that which the guest requires. It really is quite something. By the way, we're talking to Owen Perry, the visionary behind Villa del Palmar Resort at Dansante Bay, here on the 19th hole. Michael Williams, still your host. I know right now you have the whole 18 open, Owen, and it's been open for some time, and it's met with great acclaim. I've written about it. Other people have written about it. What, in your mind, makes the course special? What do you love about the course at Dansante Bay?
Well, I do believe the scenery of the mountains, because you have the Gigante Mountain Chain. It's like a half-moon circle around the bay. There's only one way in. And the scenery is just amazing, being surrounded by the mountains and going out in the ocean and seeing everything. That's part of it. What I also heard a lot of people that did golf courses is they say, no, there's 2 things you want to try and do. Keep it as natural as possible, mm-hmm. and have a few fun par 3s on it.
Hmm.
And so that was our goal too. And so we didn't blow up all these mountains and all this other stuff. We kind of, and I think the personality of the property comes out in the golf course, mm-hmm. rather than, you know, having some extreme, you know, construction project where you blow everything up, I think the personality of the course comes out as well, which I think is a big reason why it's so popular.
Yeah, it's it really does have, to me, as I described it, it has 3 distinct parts where you have sort of the mountain view, the mountain section, and you have the part that's sort of dominated by the ocean views, and then sort of that last 6 is just hold on to your socks. It's one of the biggest big finishes that I've ever seen on a golf course. And it is not only that beautiful, not only that that much, it's challenging, but it's doable for anybody. But you just can't stop taking pictures. I tell everybody who goes there, make sure that you have a full phone and a battery backup when you go out, because you are going to use it at that particular spot. And if I remember correctly, the TPC group is one that agreed with me. And is Dansante Bay a member of the TPC club organization? Is that correct?
Yes. You know, after we did that event that you came to and other sports writers came to, we had great positive results from that opening promotion day. And about 2 or 3 months later, I get an email from the PGA Tour. And it says, Mr. Perry, hey, we'd like to come down and talk to you about becoming a TPC course. And, we're just opening up, we didn't have a lot of rounds, a lot of guests, a lot of promotion yet. So I think, oh my gosh, I don't know if we could do anything like that right now, guys. Maybe come back. Let's talk in like another year or two. Let us gear things up and get things going well. And they were adamant. They said, well, why don't you let us just come down and talk to you? So about another month later, they came down, and it was one of the vice president of the PGA Tour and another sports writer that was there that used to be a pro on the tour. And they started talking to me and they said, hey, you know, we believe this course is very special and we would like it in our network, part of our portfolio. And they showed me the logo, you know.
Yeah.
They had the TPC, the swinging, you know, and they had me at the logo, but I had to keep my mouth like in my serious face, you know.
Yeah.
So anyway, we worked out a deal that was very affordable for me to do, very creative. We signed a 3-year deal. We just signed a 5-year extension to it in January.
Congratulations.
And what it did for us is, you know, because I ask around, you know, because I never played a TPC course, you know, there's, and I asked some of my friends up in San Diego and stuff like that. They go, well, you know, when you go to play a TPC course, it's going to be a very good quality course. Mm-hmm. And that is the criteria that we really are serious about keeping, is that it's a quality course, you're going to have a quality experience, you know, we take care of everything, you know, we fix the divots at night, we do everything 100%, and it really is now, like you say, turning into a very popular thing now, a very popular course that people just want to go to and experience it.
Yeah, and I have to ask you, because I've asked other people and I know that others have their opinions. I have mine. Is there a signature hole for you on the course that stands out as being extra special?
Well, hole 17 comes up. I mean, it's been written in magazines. They're calling it, you know, one of the top holes in the world of golf.
Yeah.
Hole 17 was really originally not in the original plans, but me and Reese, we looked at it one day and we both came to the conclusion that if we did this, if we, you know, we'd have to redo some holes and stuff like that. But if we did it, it'd be one of the best golf holes in Baja. And so I said, okay, well, let's do that. And so we built it. And then, you know, Reese calls me up. I wasn't there when it opened. And Reese called me up and he's going, oh, and this is going to be one of the best holes in Mexico. I go, okay, that's better than just Baja, I guess. So, yeah, hole 17 it's a panoramic hole that you overlook at the islands of Laredo, that you can see whales going by in the wintertime. And it's just a fun par 3 and challenging also to play.
Let's see. Now you reminded me very much of Reese because you're so understated. That par 3, I will tell you, is I would say it's in the running for best par 3s in the world. People, and I've seen people make the walk, people who do not even play golf and have no intention of ever picking up the correct end of a golf club will make the walk from the hotel to number 17 tee just to take that picture, just to see what that entire hole looks like. It is spectacular to look at, and it is, you could play it all day long. It's just a beauty. And I would say that to anyone. It's really something special. I have to ask, did you and Reese saw that together and sort of built that together, didn't you?
Oh yeah. Oh, definitely. You know, Reese, like I say, that was, you know, the best, one of the best parts of the experience of with Reese Jones as the architect is, you know, he wanted to do what was best for the course and how things would work out. And that's what was, you know, I always take back from working with him is his professionalism of, all right, let's do the right thing here. You know, that looks good. Great. Let's do it. You know, or if it didn't, he'd also say that too. But, yes, it was a mutual decision that we did.
Well, it was a mutual decision to everyone's benefit. It is, without a doubt, one of the most spectacular par 3 holes. But a matter of fact, one of the most spectacular holes of any length that you'll ever want to see.
Well, the TPC commercials, you know, that they show now on the Golf Channel, they even are showing it on NBC and CBS now. They say TPC course, you know, play where the pros play, and go to paradise, and they show a drone shot of hole 17.
Yes. Yeah. It's worth the trip. That alone to me is worth the trip. But the whole course really is just, it's just an experience. It's just a fabulous experience where you get to see all of the land. It's a golf course that is a highlight, but it really highlights the land and the terrain and the surroundings that it's on. And that's a magical combination when you get something that really blends the two so perfectly, the game and where it's played. You guys have really done something special there. And just getting to brass tacks about people who are probably salivating right now listening to this and thinking about how they get there. Is course play included in the hotel stay, or how do you work that with a place there? I mean, so many people are coming to play.
Yes, we do packages. We do golf packages. We just do it standalone resort, you know, resort stay with golf extra, because we have a world class spa. We have a lot of different island trips, you know, snorkeling and ATV tours. And now we even added a helicopter tour.
Really?
Yes. Very amazing. Because, you know, Baja area is just scenery. You know, it's just amazing. All these, you know, you can see the history of the world, you know, on some of these plateaus and everything like that. Very unique.
Yes. Yes.
So we added that also. So we have a lot of stuff to do, but obviously golf is still a very popular, a big event for us. Even the, you know, I don't know, you can cut it out if you want later, but because we built a helicopter, because the tours are really going good. And we had a request for a helicopter to come in and land last week at these owners of this helicopter wanted to play golf. And it turned out to be the Zuckerberg family.
Oh, okay.
And they had a great time, and they said they're coming back in March. And a month before that, we had a yacht pull in the bay in front of us, and the owner of the Philadelphia Eagles football team, him and his wife and his group, came, and they stayed 4 days to just play golf every day.
Wow.
So we're definitely getting out there.
And I'm pretty sure that I've had something to do with that, Owen.
Yes, you probably did.
So throw that out there. So you've got this course done. Do you have any desire to build more golf courses to get more properties under your belt?
I worked, for a long time. And a lot of people would ask me how I got to where I am. And that's why I wrote Plan E. It's kind of like my journey to where I'm at now. And so basically I've had a lot of success, and I've dotted the I's and crossed the T's. I did it right. And I have 4 children, and so I want to make a balance of life. So yes, I would like to do another golf course. Do I have to do it for any reasons other than, you know, wanting to do it? I'm looking at some, you know, what Baja is, you know, is only 10% of it is developed. It's the most undeveloped piece of property in North America. I mean, it's the size of Florida. I mean, and it's only 10% developed. So there's just so many beautiful spots around, that could be developed, and that's what I'm looking at now.
Wow.
Like I say, golf is everywhere now. Like in Cabo is 30 yes. golf courses, I want to find a place that's kind of like Loretto, that's a little exclusive, and you can be very creative with it.
That's kind of fascinating to me, that there's that much available land there for someone like you, who considers the world such a big palette. And you've mentioned it a couple of times. Would you talk a little bit about your book? I know you had the opportunity to tell your life story and your premise and to give some hints to people. Talk a little bit about the book and what it can teach us.
Well, basically, for me, it was a way to connect all of the different facets of my life together. And also, I would always get a lot of comments from people is, how does an American like you, you know, do this business in Mexico and have a great deal of success? You know, do you do illegal things or things like that? And it really gets annoying after a while, because, You know, I've been in Mexico now like some 35 years, and I've had a great experience there. The people have been, you know, friendly, and you know, it's just been a great experience for me. I can't explain it any other way, you know, because, you know, people watch the news up here and they go, oh my gosh, there's robberies everywhere. I've never seen one, you know, I've never seen it. I've never seen anything like that. So I kind of wrote the book just to kind of get people off the, you know, the track, you know, negative track of, oh my gosh, you must be doing something wrong down there. Or, you know, because even I was talking to some developers up here the other day, like, you know, yeah, you probably bribed somebody to get your permits. I go, absolutely not. I mean, would you do it up here? You know, why would you do it down there? They have a system, a legal system, get an attorney, do your studies, boom, 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 you're done, you know? So that's kind of why the passion I put into the book. So at least it tells my story. So people understand, you know, what we've done, and it's hard work and being a team, a good team. And that's how we really have been successful.
And the book is available on Amazon, as most books are, is it not?
Yes, I've sold over 1,000 copies.
Congratulations.
A year, yeah.
Congratulations. That's really outstanding. I mean, to get a look at the mind that is behind that particular property, to me, that's a great opportunity, because anybody can look at it, appreciate it, but it gives you some background and some insight into what it takes to do that. And it will help you in your own life too, because a lot of people have vision and have trouble getting to it. So anybody who's done that and can explain how they've done it, I think is a real boon, it's a real gift. So thank you very much for doing that. Let me ask you this, for people who want to get more information, because now you can just hear people waiting for you to give the website where you go to this information and booking. Bookings are going to go up after this show comes out. I guarantee you, it's my fault. So where do people go for more information about how to get to Villa del Palmar and Danzante Bay?
Well, you know, it's Villa del Palmar Resort, Loreto.com. Everything is there, or Danzante Bay. .com, because we also, it's a master plan community. We have 85 house lots and 34 have been sold. We have a lot of construction going on. We're building a wellness resort there right now. Wow. Also to add another more services to, you know, the experience when you come. You know, we added more airlines. You know, Alaska flies out of LA every day, and out of San Francisco, we get American Airlines. It flies out of Phoenix and Dallas. Dallas is becoming a big market for Loreto also.
Nice. Very nice. And right now, you say you have designs on building a golf course. And I just want to get a scoop here. Is there any thought towards building a second course at this property?
You know, I asked Reese, you know, about a year ago. We have some land in the back, but we could only fit 9 holes. So what we'd probably do in just in the bay is come up with like 3 9 hole courses. You know, that's kind of what Palmia did with the Nicholas courses. You got 3 9, so you can play 2 or 3 in one day, whatever you want. But I do believe, you know, around our property is a lot of undeveloped property that would be, you know, amazing new properties for golf course there. I think, you know, I think Loreto has a good chance to becoming like another Palm Springs or something like that by the ocean, you know, because it has the mountain range, you know, like Palm Springs, but you're right on the ocean. So I do believe it's going to keep growing, definitely.
That is a really interesting thing that you just said, being the comparison to Palm Springs. So I have to say check. I hadn't thought of that before, but yeah, it really does have all the same things except the crowds of people. It really is a spectacular setup. What are you going to do next? Are you going to go play some golf on your own golf course? Are you going someplace to play someplace else? Are you just going to work all the time, 18 hours a day?
No, I'm playing a lot of golf. You know, where I live in Cabo, it's the Maravilla development. It's the old Twin Dolphin.
Sure.
And they have a golf course there. I just played a tournament last week, me and my son. I'm glad my son, it was best ball because, you know, it was a fun experience, you know. But anyway, I play a lot of golf. It's one of my favorite sports right now, actually, because I love going out in the afternoon, whether it's my course or in Cabo or you know, my house here in San Diego, I'm on the Del Mar Country Club. So I always enjoy playing now. And I think that, you know, when you get a little older, you know, it keeps you in good shape, you know?
Yeah.
So I play a lot of golf now and I really enjoy it. It's one of my favorite things to do now.
Well, it's become a lot of people's very favorite thing to do. And I just want to thank you, number one, for coming on the show, but number two, for just making this experience available to people. It is an amazing, amazing destination. Congratulations on everything you've done. And whenever you have something to talk about for a new venture or a new attraction or anything, you always have a place to come in this show to share it with people, okay?
Well, Mike, I want to thank you so much for connecting with us and allowing us to talk to you. It was really enjoyable meeting you years ago, and we'd love to have you back. So please come on back when you have a chance.
You had me at hello, sir. You had me at hello. Dylan, thanks so much for taking the time, my friend, and we will see you soon.
All right. Thank you.
Terrific. That was Owen Perry of Villa del Palmar, Danzante Bay. The whole resort itself is just a revelation. I have to tell you, when you go there, you are literally transported to another place, and it's a place that you don't really want to leave, no matter how long you spend there. And we wanted to have Reese Jones on. We'll have him on in a few minutes. But having Reese here for this and having these two guys talk, it struck me just now talking to Owen just how similar they are. It doesn't surprise me that they came up with this great project because they have two things in common. They're both extremely gentlemanly as people, and they're both extremely pragmatic. And it's very rare that you meet people who have great imagination, but the pragmatism to make those things actually happen. And those are characteristics that are shared by Owen Perry and Reese Jones. So it is no surprise that they've done great things, and we hope we'll see them do some great things coming up in the future. We're going to take a break, and we'll come right back with more golf and stuff. Michael Williams, 19th hole. Welcome back to the 19th hole. Michael Williams, your host. And I am sort of focused right now on sort of traveling golf, because where I am right now, it's not really suitable to play golf on any given day. You can't really tell. You know, in D.C. in this time of year, you could have a day where it's 55. You can get a day where it's 25. And they can be back-to-back or shuffle together. You don't really know. So if your safe bet is if you want to play golf, you're going to travel a little bit. And as I said before, one of my favorite places to go, one of my favorite places to play is Danzante Bay. That course is just special. It's how it looks, how it plays. I think it's so unique, but it also speaks very well to the style of golf course that designers are making now for the wide variety of golfers that are parking at golf courses now. Joining me now is somebody who knows more than I'll ever know. He's forgotten more than I'll ever know about golf course design. He is an award-winning designer. He's also known as the Open Doctor. He is a great friend, a great advocate for the game of golf, and I'm happy to say he's a pretty good friend of mine. Please welcome Hall of Famer Reese Jones to the 19th hole. Reese, welcome back. How are you, my friend?
Great to be back with you, Michael.
Always good to have you. And I just got to ask, where are you right now in the midst of this wintry mix we are having?
Well, I'm getting smarter every day. I'm in South Florida, and the weather's been fantastic.
Oh, nicely done. We'll have to work that out, okay? We'll stay in touch, see if I can get down there and meet you and get to play some golf there. But it's not good here for playing golf. But we were talking with Owen Perry of Damzante Bay, and it is just a spectacular golf course. And I told you when it was first being built, I think I got to play it when there were 13 holes available, and I told you it's one of the best golf courses I'd ever seen, and you humbly agreed. This is an amazing thing that you've done there with Owen Perry. How did you two guys meet? How did you end up getting together?
Well, Owen contacted us, and we did a layout, and he was from San Diego, so while I was working at Torrey Pines, getting that ready for the U.S. Open a second time, we would meet in San Diego, and then I visited him, and my associates visited him down in Loretto to discover this really unbelievable natural piece of ground next to the Sea of Cortez.
Hey, hold on one second. Okay, so you got down to the Sea of Cortez, which is a beautiful piece of wilderness, a beautiful piece of land. And did you see immediately the possibilities for a golf course there, or did it come to you eventually, or were you just struck immediately and said, yeah, here's where it goes, here's going to be routed? What was the process in planning the routing for that particular track down there?
Well, when Owen Perry showed me the site, I knew it was a spectacular piece of ground where a spectacular golf course could really be conceived. It had every element. It was a rugged landscape. It had mountainous terrain. It had oceanside dunes terrain. It had cliffside terrain next to the Sea of Cortez. It had arroyos. It had sand-based property. It had, a desert look. And it had the topography. It had every element that would create a diverse and wonderful golf experience.
And it is diverse. I think that's a very interesting thing that you say, because you have the seaside holes, you have the desert holes, you have, of course, the famous 16th, which we'll talk about in a minute, but it really has a variety of landscapes that you don't really see very often in any golf course.
No, and there aren't many courses like that. Cypress Point has that. Red Stick in Florida has that. And when you have a diversity of landscape, it really gives the architect an opportunity to really achieve something kind of unique, because there are very few sites like that in the world.
Amen to that. Having said that, do you have, I know you love all your babies, but do you have any particular favorite hole, a particular favorite hole or favorite holes at that particular golf course?
Well, Damzante Bay, because of the varied terrain, really changes pace and changes feel all the way through the round. And it's a course that you can play over and over again because you never tire of it because of the natural beauty and the diversity. But I don't think I have a favorite hole on many golf courses, but at Damzante Bay, I think everybody's favorite hole is the 17th, which is a par 3 drop shot hole that plays right to the Sea of Cortez on top of a cliff with a mountainous surrounds. And it's 175 yards long from the back tee. It's surrounded by sand, really to protect you as much as penalize you. And it's a wide green that requires a really good drop shot. It's been regarded as one of the best par threes in the world already.
Yeah, I would say, from the first time you see it, you would say it's one of the best golf holes in the world. And I guess as evidence of that fact, I've said it many times, that you don't see many other holes where people are waking up at 6 o'clock in the morning, whether they play golf or not, to walk up to that golf hole and just take pictures there and be there and see it. It's a place where you want to be and you want to see it, whether you play golf or not. And that's got to be a rare thing in golf.
No, it's one of those holes like Cypress Point 16. When I was a youngster in my 30s, I was driving up the coast of California, and I drove up the 17-mile drive, and I told my wife to wait a second. I took my driver out of the car, ran into Cypress Point, hit the drive on the green, ran back to the car. And I think it's one of those type of holes where I think people just go to Danzante Bay. If they don't play golf at all, they still play that hole.
Yeah, it's really a special thing that you've done there. And we'll come back to them in a minute, but I want to get your thoughts while I have you on 2025, the year that just passed, and 2026, the year that's coming up. Just talking about golf in general now, we saw record numbers of players coming to the game for the second or third consecutive year. Is that something that you think will continue? And do you think it's really a good thing? Obviously, it's good for in terms of revenue, but it's a good thing for golf to be growing as fast as it is, something that can be maintained.
I don't know
if it's growing too fast or not, but I know it is growing. It's growing because during COVID, people had very few things that they could do effectively without contracting the virus. So they discovered golf, and they found it as a social game, a game where they'd be with their three other friends and converse rather than be on their iPhone or their computer. And it became as much of a social game as it is a competitive game, if not more of a social game. And I think that's what's grown the game of golf, because people found that they enjoyed these facilities and places like Danzante Bay, even if they aren't that great in the game itself. I mean, when I go to Torrey Pines and walk around that on a daily basis, there are a lot of players that really shoot in the hundreds, but they love being at Torrey Pines, and that's the same as at Danzante Bay.
Yeah, it's the opportunity to see something that they haven't seen before, and there's a lot of land, a lot of just earth architecture that you get a chance to see that's very unique when you get a chance to play golf, and I think people are seeing it and are attracted to that thing over and over and over again. But we also have more players now, but we have less courses. Courses are kind of closing down. Is that a good thing? You think that can be maintained with more players, less courses?
Well, the courses did close down before the pandemic, I don't think as many are scheduled to close down. And there still are a lot of courses like Wellman that we built in Johnsonville, South Carolina, that you can still play for a reasonable fee. So as long as we still have Bryan Parks and Wellmans, where you can get on the course with a quality golf course at a reasonable fee, we're still going to have a lot of growth in the game.
Yeah, I think you're right about that. Turning to the professional game, you have the LIV Tour, which has been out there for some time, raking up the muck on the professional circuit. Now you have sort of a wind of change where you have players going back to the PGA Tour. Talk a little bit about that. What do you see as a future for that particular tour?
I think the fact that they have the money, it means that I think they're going to sustain themselves. I think LIV will continue. They're committed to all kinds of sports in that part of the world, and they're bringing professional golf. It depends on really what kind of money they want to throw at these players in the future. However, it looks like Brooks Koepka is going to be invited back to the tour now, and it looks like they're going to invite John Rahm and DeChambeau and Cameron Smith. So we'll see what happens with them. But I think it's going to be like anything. It's going to be a competition, which it really wasn't in the past.
I think that's right. When you have players of that caliber who are performing in a separate league on a separate stage, it somewhat diminishes even the major championships. And I think there's no doubt that the smaller championships, the smaller events have been affected, but even the larger events, which are events because of what they are, not necessarily who plays in them, those have been affected too. And I feel like those are going to be, they're going to be boosted by the attendance of these players, don't you?
Well, the one thing the majors were able to accomplish was that they did not keep the LIV players out of their events. So really every type of player was able to compete. However, the world rankings have not really been scheduled for the LIV players because they don't play 72 whole rounds. And I think that's going to probably have to change just so that the majors have the best players possible in their fields. So I think that's probably going to be reassessed and probably changed to accommodate the LIV players, just so we have the best players in the major events.
Well, let's talk about Scottie Scheffler for a minute. He's made history, literally, over the course of the last two or three years with his winning at a pace that is seldom seen. Where do you put him in your pantheon of the greatest ever, air quotes there? If there's a top tier, a pantheon that includes, let's say, Tiger and Jack at the top, and then whoever's at the next level, where would you put him, Scottie Scheffler, in that group?
Well, Scottie Scheffler is definitely on his way to become one of the greatest golfers that has ever lived. I think what happens when you have a Jack Nicklaus or a Tiger Woods in the field, and when they're competing with you for the championship, it gets in the back of the head of most of the players. And I think that's why they accomplish so many victories over their careers, Nicklaus and Tiger. And I think that's probably what Scottie's going to do now, too, because he just has it all. And he's as a junior player, he won like 60% of the tournaments he played. He's used to winning, and he knows how to win, and he believes he's going to win. And the players that compete against him know that that's what he has in his mind, and he has the capability of it. So they probably don't play as well when he's on top of the leaderboard or just behind them a little bit.
Yeah, I think you're right. When you get this thing where players are playing against the player rather than against the scoreboard, that is a huge advantage for that guy who they're playing against, that guy who's in their minds. And when we talk about Scottie, it seems as though the more we talk about Scottie, the less we talk about Rory McIlroy, who has been sort of the name for seven, at least, out of the last 10 years. Now, Scheffler's come along. It's all about Scottie. But is Rory, now that he's got the Masters, the Augusta monkey off of his back, is he destined for even greater things, a push to be like the Vijay Singh of his generation, accomplishing things well into his 40s?
Well, to give Rory a lot of credit, he's accomplished a lot in his lifetime in golf already. He had a slow period. He didn't play poorly, but others played better. That's the problem with golf. There's only one victor out of 156 players. So it's not like you're playing just another team and one out of the two will win. So to accomplish the career Grand Slam, Rory has really accomplished what others really, very few others have done. And so, but Rory, I think, is on the way back. He believes in himself. He's got his life in order. He's happy. And he's accomplished the major, the Grand Slam, the career Grand Slam. So I think we're going to see a lot more of Rory. And I think the beauty of what's coming up on the PGA Tour is you've got the Arnold Palmer, Jack Nicklaus competition, the Tiger Woods, Phil Mickelson competition. Now you have the Scottie Scheffler, Rory McIlroy competition. It's very good for the game. It's very good for the TV ratings.
It is good for the ratings. And that's what we always like to see, is great events in great venues on television. So hopefully you'll have this duel that we haven't been able to get in past generations. Well, in this last generation with Tiger, we were never able to really get a Tiger or the way we had Jack or Tom Watson, Jack Lee Trevino. Those sorts of players didn't exist for Tiger. Do you think that we'll have a great rivalry come up between Scottie and Rory?
Well, you bring up a very good point, but there may be several. It may be like three or four. That was the case at Torrey Pines in 2021 when the top five players in the world were in the back nine with a chance to win, and John Rahm became the victor. I think if John Rahm gets back on the tour, definitely if DeChambeau gets back on the tour, you might have a foursome that's going to compete on a daily or monthly basis in the majors. So I think it may be more than two. It'd probably be four or five.
Hmm. As the Bee Gees once said, wouldn't it be nice? Wouldn't it be nice? Well, as we close out, I want to get back to you and the things you're doing. Are you working on anything now? I know you're always working on hundreds of things. Is there anything you want to share with us or tell us about? Anything you can tell us about?
Well, we're working a lot. We got a project in Costa Rica. We're about to start one in Puerto Rico. We're about to start one in the Dominican Republic. We're going to do the Morfar golf course over in Brewster, New York. We just finished redoing Quintero in Arizona, which is a spectacular golf course that we did
20 some odd years ago. We just refurbished it. We're doing a lot of remodeling in Florida, and we've got a lot of new jobs coming up. All of a sudden, a lot of new remote jobs are in the our list of courses. And it's a nice time. It's not a boom time like it was before 2008, but it is a very nice time in golf, and golf is gaining strength every day.
Hmm. And you got golf courses all over the place, but if there's one place that you could choose to put a golf course tomorrow, you know, some place that you've seen or some place, whether you've put a course there before or haven't put one there before, is there a place where you say, man, I'd love to put a track down there?
Well, it's really not the place itself. I mean, when I did Cascada in Las Vegas, that was a mountainous site that has spectacular. I mean, when people play at Danzante Bay to get that site and build a golf course on it, when Owen Perry discovered that site in the bay and the beach, I mean, it was like manna from heaven for a golf course architect. Playa Grande in the Dominican, it's almost a better site than Pebble Beach. It's got holes along the cliff, and the cliff side is not a straight line. It's irregular, so it's very, very spectacular. To build courses up in New Hampshire at Baker Hill and Nantucket, I've been very, very fortunate to have great sites. And a great site, you can build a really great golf experience.
But there's no place in your mind where you said, I've been there, and I didn't see one there, but a golf course goes there. Is there any place in your mind where you had that sort of feeling?
Well, I think Mexico is going to have some great sites like Danzante Bay. I'm not sure anybody's going to find as good a site as Danzante Bay. I don't think there's another site like Playa Grande in the Dominican. But I don't know if it's really the location, but I think the beauty of what I did is I designed golf courses where the courses were easily accessible. A lot of golf courses are now being built on remote sites where you have to take a private plane and can only get there, you know, infrequently. And I think that the great thing that I did over the years was have the opportunity to build golf courses that were near a population center or near a major airport. Yeah. So people could really enjoy the courses.
Yeah, that's really important to have people be able to get to the courses. And, you know, with this, I've talked about it often, this barbell you have in, growing in golf courses where you have these super expensive courses and you have the munis. Both of them seem to be doing well, but there's very little being built in the middle. This sort of a wonderful, affordable golf is becoming more and more rare. I hope that's something that the industry sees and will address, because you have more people coming into the game, so they have to play someplace. Do you get how long?
That's a great point, Michael, and that's why I built Wellman in Johnsonville, and it's been extremely successful. And you still play there for $80 a round,
yeah,
and which means the everyday player can come and play. And the beauty of Wellman, and there's more trucks in that parking lot than there are cars.
I love it. That's the site I'd like to see you get that picture up. Are you going to be playing any this winter in Florida? You got a round coming up?
Oh, yeah. I play here. I play at the Preserve and Iron Horse. I play at the Breakers, which I built both those golf courses. I play at Addison Reserve and Broken Sound. There's a lot of courses I can play. We did a lot of work down here. Boca Woods, and especially Coral Ridge, which is the Robert Trent Jones family course that I completely rebuilt 5 years ago. So I have it made down here in South Florida because I have a lot of places and that I can enjoy. In fact, I'm going to go over to Ballon Isles and play the South course next week.
Well, I won't do anything to stop you there, and I'm going to do everything I can to join you at a couple of those courses, because you name places that I haven't been, and I want to play, and I want to play with you, my friend. So if you're open to it, I'll join you. Is that cool?
That's cool.
Beautiful. Hey, Reese, it's always a pleasure to have you on the show. You're just a wealth of knowledge, and congratulations on everything you've done with Danzante Bay and all the other courses you're planning. And we can't wait to have you back on to see what else is new is going on with you and with golf.
Okay, keep up the great work, Michael.
Appreciate it. That's Reese Jones, the golf course designer extraordinaire. Again, I've talked about Danzante Bay multiple times on this particular broadcast, but again, as Ferris Bueller said, if you have the means, I highly recommend it. It is a beautiful golf course. it's not just a course, it's an experience. It's really something where you will get to feel like very few players play, when you enjoy the game, you can enjoy the surroundings, and you can have your mind on both equally and enjoy them equally. It's really something special, and I encourage everyone to get a chance to play that. No matter what your level of expertise, you will enjoy that particular place. It is an experience. We'll be right back with more Golf and Stuff. Stay with us. Michael Williams, 19th hole. Well, boys and girls, it's my pleasure to say for the first time this year, that's it and that's all for this edition of the 19th Hole. I want to thank my very special guests, Owen Perry and Reese Jones, both the co-visionaries, I will say, of Danzante Bay in Mexico. It is, without a doubt, one of the best courses you're ever going to see, you're ever going to play. Do make the time and go out and see that course. You won't be sorry that you did. You really won't be. You can hear this show and all of the shows in the 19th Hole series on Apple Music. You can hit them on Spotify and other great sites where great podcasts are displayed. Thank you very much. We, of course, thank you for listening. We do it all for you. We'll be back next week with another great show. In the meantime, even though it's the winter, go out someplace. Go top golf. You know, it doesn't matter. Just go someplace, tee up a ball, hit them, and when you do, try your level best to hit them straight. Michael Williams, 19th hole.